in conversation with musicians from the UK jazz scene. And now your hosts, Rob Cope and Dan Farrant.
Hello and welcome to the Jazz Podcast. I am your host, Rob Cope, and with me, as always, is Dan Farrant. How's it going, Dan?
Doing all right, thanks, Rob. How about you?
Very good. It's very good to be back in Godalming.
Yeah, well, Godalming, is that what you're saying?
I've always had a problem with this word.
And Godalming. No, Godalming.
Godalming. What did I...
Godders.
Godders. I used to mispronounce it differently to what I'm doing now, but I've even forgotten how it was that I couldn't
say
it before.
What did you used to say?
I can't remember. It's in one of the old shows, though.
Okay, we'll have to
do you remember there's a
the
jazz
archives.
Podcast from last year when we walked around Godalming?
Godalming.
Godalming.
Yeah.
And we, like, recorded a band playing.
Oh, on a Sunday. You came down for lunch for one of the bandstand Sunday.
Yeah, exactly.
Sessions. Yeah, I do remember that. That was
a
nice day.
Remember which show it is.
No.
It's out there.
Yeah. Well, I'm not going to listen back for it, are you?
Wade through the back catalogue.
No.
So today, we're going to talk to Miriam Ast. She's a German-born, London-based jazz vocalist.
Okay, I've not heard of her. This would be good.
Yes. So she's got a new album out called Secret Songs. So we're going to get to work and let's talk to her.
Okay, great.
Welcome to the Jazz Podcast.
Hello, Rob. Thanks for having me here on the show.
Oh, it's our pleasure. How are you doing?
I'm really good. Thank you. Just been coming home from 3 days teaching in Leeds, the last 3 days. And yeah, now I'm in my home in Greenwich, London.
Oh, Greenwich. How lovely.
Yeah.
What made you decide to live in Greenwich? Other than the obvious fact that it's really, really lovely.
it came through a really good pianist actually from the London scene, Sam Leake. And it was during my first year at the Royal Academy of Music, and I was looking for a new place to live. I lived in East Acton and didn't really enjoy the place very much, and so I just wrote on Facebook. He was a Facebook friend of mine, like, any places available would be great with musicians. And he replied right away and said, like, yeah, we have a room free, and come and check it out. And yeah, that was here in East Greenwich, and I still live here. Like, it's been 3 years now. 2015 I moved in, and yeah, I really enjoy it.
That's awesome. I did a similar thing living in Harlesden, and that's pretty close to East Acton, and I hated it. And then moved to Twickenham because it was like the nicest place I could find.
Okay, cool. Yeah.
So it also shows my age that you managed to do an entire, like, degree at Academy since I've left, that I didn't actually know that you'd studied there till I read your biography.
Even though I think we're similar age. How old are you?
Yeah, I'm 30.
I'm 29.
So. Wow.
Yeah.
This is another one of, there's a few shows I've done recently where it's felt like it was harder not to meet than it would have been to meet up somewhere.
Okay, yeah.
So let's talk about your life. Where did you grow up?
I grew up in the southwest of Germany. It's like the federal state Rhineland-Palatinate, like really west of Germany. And it's a small town where I'm from, called Speyer, with a really big cathedral. And I really like it, but it's good to go back sometimes. But I needed a bigger place after a while.
Yeah.
And yeah, it's close to Mannheim, if that tells you something, or maybe Frankfurt. Frankfurt would be the biggest city, like, yeah.
Okay.
That people here in the UK might know.
Yeah. how long did you live in Germany for?
I lived there 25 years of my life.
Yeah. Wow. That's a really long time. So where did you study before you came, I'm getting too carried away. How did you get into singing?
So I think I sang since I can remember, since I was a little kid. Like, my mom and other people tell me, someone even told me I was singing before I could speak.
Wow, cool.
So yeah, it was just a really natural thing for me. I grew up in a musical family. My dad is a music teacher and always played the piano. And my sister makes music. And yeah, then, but the singing is, I think, I got into that through various choirs I sang in, like really from a young age. And then I got into a gospel choir in my hometown.
Oh, cool. That sounds awesome.
Yeah, it was cool. Yeah, directed by my dad.
Amazing.
House more the places, and yeah, just started to sing there. Like, could just started learning English at the time. I was 10, 11, and right away went into this choir and sang all these cool songs. I really enjoyed it, and yeah, after a while I started to take some solo parts, and that's actually, yeah, it was through choral singing, I would say, I got. But not very classical singing, but right away a more popular music and, yeah, gospel.
Do you still sing that kind of music now?
Not really, no. No, it's I feel it's been an important part of my life, and it's also, like, yeah, one form, like, one gospel is, like, a form, like a form before jazz music developed. So I can hear, like, all these, like, syncopation in the music that is as well a part of jazz music. So it's definitely, yeah, something I think was important in my life to do it at the time. But then when I was 14, 15, I got more into jazz music. But that happened actually through the saxophone.
Oh, cool. How?
I am also, yeah, when I was that age or a bit younger, I started playing saxophone, and I always loved improvisation. I've always been like a person who was very much like focused on hearing and listening less than sight reading music. I was really bad at that. So, I just listened a lot to music and listened a lot and improvised a lot. And then my saxophone teacher started, just really like introducing me to some nice records, like Sonny Rollins' Saxophone Colossus was one of the first records I listened to, and some Dexter Gordon. And he was just like a recent graduate from a music college in Mannheim. And yeah, it was really cool, just like inspiring how he introduced me to jazz music. And that's how I started like improvising, getting a bit more into the harmony. Before, I had only improvised pentatonically. And then I started to understand like what you can really do learning about 251s and different patterns you could play on them. And it all came together then. Like it was like a puzzle coming together, and I started understanding it more, like also in a theoretical way.
Yes. And then how does that fit in with singing and saxophone playing? When did you decide like not to be, you know, playing a saxophone?
Mainly a saxophonist, yeah. At the same time I was also taking jazz singing lessons and really enjoyed that too. But like even there, improvisation was an important part to me. I started scat singing then, and I felt that always everything that I had learned with the saxophone, all the patterns and licks and the harmonic ideas, I could right away transfer to my voice.
Right.
So I just sang what I played then.
Oh, amazing.
Yeah. And it's also like, I started studying saxophone and singing at music conservatory. So like the decision to go really like more into the vocal path happened maybe like when I was 22 or 3. Like I really started studying both and also enjoyed that and I think it helped me develop all my improvisational skills that I have, like when I'm singing. But then during that time at the music conservatory in Germany, in Mainz, it was when I decided to pursue more like a path in with jazz singing.
Right, but you studied saxophone as well.
Yeah.
Oh, that's really cool.
Yeah, exactly.
Do you still play it?
I still play it a bit. Yeah, I don't play very much like in public at the moment.
Yeah.
I still use it as a source of inspiration. Yeah. For improvising, definitely. Yeah.
Oh,
yeah. Yeah. Which... I played a bit at the academy also. Like I had some lessons with Martin Speak, with Ian Bellamy. So that's a good thing at academy that you can just like you have got these hours that you can use for whatever you like.
Yeah.
So you don't just have to have singing lessons if you're a singer, or just saxophone lessons or drumming lessons. You can, go to whoever you like to.
Yeah, that's really a huge bonus that, like you say, you can literally do whatever you want. So after Mainz, is that when you decided that you come to London?
Yeah. About that time, I had graduated with my singing, so I had done that concert, like the final concert, and I was still about to do my final concert in saxophone. And during that time, I thought, I really want to go abroad. I want to go to like a bigger place because Mainz is still located close to my hometown. I never really got away, like, I just wanted to see more of the world, that way. So, just being abroad was also like a big thing that I had wanted to do during my bachelor's. You know, there are these Erasmus programs that you can take part in to go like for a semester somewhere else. It didn't really work for me that way during my bachelor's. So I said, okay, now for the master, I'm going to do it. So I applied in different European cities. I did an audition in Amsterdam, in Paris, and in London. Yeah, at the Royal Academy of Music.
Right.
and then it worked out in London. I got accepted, and that's how I came there.
So you were never tempted to stay in Berlin or anything?
No, not really. No, to be honest, when I was younger, when I was like 18, 19, finishing school, I wanted to go to Berlin, really. I wanted to. I had been there with my school, and I just like thought it's such a cool city, such a hip city. But I didn't do it at the time. Berlin is one of the most highly regarded conservatories in Germany, and maybe at the time I wasn't there yet. Like you needed like really great recordings and stuff. I didn't apply at all, but for me, I think at the time it was good to be in a smaller place.
Yeah.
But then, yeah, after the 4 years bachelor's, I felt, yeah, now is the time. And yeah, Berlin would have been cool as well. But yeah, in the end, I wanted to go abroad. That was the thing in my mind. And so, yeah.
That's really cool that you knew that you wanted to get out and go and live in a different country.
Yeah.
Have you ever tempted to leave London?
Yeah, I have these thoughts, of course, sometimes, because I feel a lot of things are more difficult than they could be, perhaps, if I, yeah. I went back and, like, had my small, yeah, my, like, just, like, the few people I know there, and, like, the scene is much smaller, and at the time when I was, like, yeah, in the last year before I moved to London, I had quite a lot of engagements and was involved in lots of projects and played with some nice people. So like in terms of gigs, it was going well.
Yeah.
But yeah, I just decided to do this. And definitely was a big step and makes lots of things harder in a way, but also opens opportunities, of course. Like you meet so many great, amazing people, musicians.
Yeah.
That I would have never come across if I had stayed. And yeah, just like all the concerts going on. But yeah, it's way harder really building up a career. I find it very difficult to start a career in London as a singer. That's what I sometimes struggle with a
right.
bit. Because of, yeah, just like the big and competitive scene. And you've got so many people who have been here for so long, and yeah, you just need to really build up a reputation before you can go into the clubs and perform.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So how did it feel when you, like, studying in London, like, at Academy, compared to what it was like to study in Mainz?
It felt good. Like, it was similar in some ways that it's a small department, and a very personal approach. You know all the teachers. It was perhaps a bit more technical, like high focus on, like, yeah, developing your chops. And yeah, everyone I met at the Royal Academy was just killing.
Yeah,
just such a high level. Also, I found a very instrumental approach in general. At the time when I was there, I was the only vocalist in the jazz department.
Wow, that's pretty unusual.
How many were there when you studied?
There were at least three at all times.
Okay. Yeah, somebody told me there were a few singers before my time. But really, yeah, when I was there, I was the only one.
Yeah.
And so, of course, that, yeah, made it also hard in some ways.
Yeah, you must have been really busy.
I must have been busy.
Yeah.
Yeah, perhaps. Yeah. Yeah, it was all right. But no, I yeah, just what they expect of a singer to do is cool, and was really good for me having had that instrumental approach before. So yeah, really singing hard stuff, like in the ensembles especially. Like, I remember my first ensemble was with Julian Aquiles.
Oh, cool.
And we did like this very like instrumental tunes, like that normally I think weren't really made for a singer to sing.
Yeah.
But I still enjoyed it. Sometimes I thought they could have put a bit more focus on adapting the program for singers. But then I understand as well that if there's just only one singer, how can they do it? Like it's not really like a course like in Leeds, for example. I teach in Leeds now. In Leeds, the singers are a big part of that. Like we have at least, I don't know, maybe in the first year, 10, 15 new singers.
Yeah.
So it's a very big part of the course. You have a lot of vocal teachers, tutors, and I guess they can adapt it more for that than us. Hold on.
Yeah, no, you're right. 15 is a lot more than one. So, when you graduated, what did you do?
When I graduated...
Yeah, like, what happened the year after?
It went really quiet suddenly, really. So I just went out, went to some jam sessions, just like really, yeah, to meet people and to get opportunities to sing. I went to a jam at a cafe, what is it called, near Piccadilly Circus. Crazy Cox was the jam. Was the night? It was almost more like a cabaret night where like singers could go on stage and perform. I was just like trying to find like lots of different ways to get the opportunity to sing and maybe also be exposed to a different audience than just jazz audience.
Yeah.
To like start and build up build up a little following or so.
Yeah.
And what else did I do? I started teaching a little bit privately, and also applied for schools at the time. I have two projects. So at the end of towards the end of the academy time, I formed like a quintet with guys from the academy, and I played my final concert with them. So I just continued rehearsing a bit with them, but like it didn't really go to big places because we just didn't get the performance opportunities at the time. So that was kind of a bit stuck and didn't really motivate me to write a full album for that in that moment then.
Yeah.
I also had started to play together with the Spanish pianist Victor Gutierrez during the academy time. And that was, it's just really nice collaboration. We're both like European, like both non-British, that like kind of made this instant connection between us. And also just musically, we were on the same wavelength. So we started jamming together on jazz standards and just having fun and doing this a regular thing. And with time, we really felt that we could develop a project and started arranging jazz standards, like Round Midnight and Alone Together, and making like our own versions, reharmonizing the chord structure and developing full arrangements of these songs, and really carving and shaping it to a point where we felt now we've created our own version, and also at the same time we started playing original compositions. Victor is a great composer. He can really like apply my voice in an instrumental way, write for me like I was a horn. So we have this one song, Don't Get Too Cocky, that people might hear today in the show.
Oh yeah, we played that at the start and then I forgot to mention it.
This song, for example, this is like one where he really, which I enjoy a lot singing. I just sing like an instrument without lyrics. And I enjoy the composition a lot, yeah.
Do you compose together?
No, we don't really compose together. We haven't really so far. So it was more like he brought in a couple of tunes, I brought in some tunes. And the process together so far happened more with the standards.
Right, okay.
These happen in the rehearsal. It's not that somebody brings a full, written out arrangement of that standard. No, we do that together in the rehearsals, and we rehearse a lot, especially before we recorded the album. We had times where we rehearsed every week a couple of hours.
Yeah,
really really intense. Yeah, and
so
that's fun,
yeah. When did you record? What even made you decide to record it as a full album?
What made us decide?
Yeah.
Yeah, it was, the fact that we had started playing and, again, with that project, we lacked the exposure. We didn't really get any, had hardly any gigs. So we thought, what to do to bring this to the next level? So we, first of all, we applied for some competitions and got into this one in Bucharest International Jazz Competition last year. And yeah, we're lucky to win a prize there.
Oh, brilliant.
That brought us some exposure on the London scene. Like, we got a London Jazz News, is it London Jazz News? Yeah, interview with Sebastian Scotney, which was great. And we played at the Vortex, and just some of these places started taking note of us a bit more than before. And it was also this competition that made us really decide this is something worth recording. And we had a nice set of tunes together. So, yeah, we decided, yeah, let's bring this into the, let's go into the studio. And, yeah, we found a very nice studio near Cardiff called Fieldgate Studios, where we recorded it. It was really important to have great piano sound.
Yeah.
As a duo.
Yeah.
And that one really particularly was recommended to us by many different musicians from the scene.
Yeah.
It has this Fasioli piano.
Oh, cool. They're really, really, really like super rare and expensive.
Yeah, quite rare, yeah. And Victor was super happy with it.
Yeah.
And yeah, you can hear it on the record. The piano sound is really, yeah, it's wonderful, yes.
So the album is called Secret Songs.
Yeah.
And it's out now. It came out in July. Is that right?
Yeah, that's correct.
Okay, fantastic. And Stan Saltzman, he's a guest on the album as well.
Yeah, that's correct. Yeah, he was one of our tutors at the Royal Academy of Music. I was in his ensemble and really enjoyed also his way of writing and, of course, his playing. And he's just like a legendary figure in the UK jazz scene. So we thought, yeah, ask him to be part of this as a special guest. And he was up for it. And so we went back to the studio because we recorded the first part as a duo in August last year, August 2017. And then this year, in March, we went back with him and recorded three tracks we had written for him. Three originals.
Oh, wow, that's really cool. Song for Stan being one of them.
Exactly. Yeah.
I'm going to play a bit of that now so that people can hear what on earth it is that we're talking about.
Yeah.
This is my master plan. Impromptu playing of Song for Stan. Something particular about Stan's playing that made you want to get him involved with the album?
Yes, I really think I really enjoy like his melodic playing. I'm also very much like a melodic singer, and like when I improvise, that's a really cool tool for me, and that's what I've always like. I think he has great chops as well, but I think he uses it in a really musical way when he improvises. And that's what really caught me with that. Yeah. So that was the reason. And yeah, I really enjoyed this ensemble at the time, as I said. And Stan and I, we even had the idea of doing a project together at the time after the Royal Academy. And it never really happened. But then I thought, yeah, why not ask him for this?
Great.
It's cool to have him on it. And yeah.
So has a lot changed since the album came out? You know, you said like it was hard to get gigs before. I mean, because it's hard anyway. But yeah. Has the album made it a lot easier?
I think it has made it a bit easier in some ways.
Yeah.
Just taking it a bit more seriously by some promoters through this album. We did get a few reviews. Yeah, we got some reviews. And I think that helped to just like to have this. Also, when we apply now for gigs, we can take these little quotes, and just from the reviews. And I think, yeah, in these terms, it helped. So we, for example, played our album release show at the 606 Club, and we played in Sheffield. Couple of weeks ago at the Lesca.
Oh, lovely.
Oh, cool, yeah. And next year we're going to play in Newcastle at the Lytton Phil. And we have a really amazing performance coming up at the London Jazz Festival.
Yeah.
on the 20th of November at the Pheasantry in Chelsea. And for this one we're going to feature Tori Freestone on saxophone.
Great.
Yeah, so yeah, really looking forward to that. It's going to be great. Yeah,
that will be amazing. What made you get Tori Freestone involved? Not that that's a terrible idea, of course, it's an amazing idea.
Yeah, Tori, since coming to the UK, I had heard her on the scene playing with Ivanine and with her own project. And then also recently this year, I heard her with Alciona Mick in a duo.
Yeah.
It's a really nice duo. And yeah, I really, really liked the playing, the interactive way they composed everything and played together. So I just thought, and I talked to her afterwards, and she was just so nice. And we're going to have the first rehearsal next week, next Friday. We have the first rehearsal as a trio. She invited us to her place, and she's going to cook something even for us.
That sounds so good.
She's just nice. Yeah.
Sounds amazing. That's great. So do you have any other plans for the project, for like another album or any other stuff that you want to record?
Yeah, I think at the moment we're really trying and get gigs out of this. So we're going to apply to lots of places and trying to secure some more shows for next year. Maybe some festivals would be great. We're trying to, like here in the UK, but also in Germany, there's a really nice festival called Enjoy Jazz near my hometown.
Oh, nice.
And it's quite international, like it's like you get like bigger names and also more regional artists. So I'll try that. And so for now, really trying to get more shows of that, and I think that is really possible. And then let's see, perhaps a new album. So Victor and I, we start featuring more and more artists, like for example for this performance at the 606. We had Matt Anderson on saxophone, but also Andres Ticino, a Uruguayan percussionist. So we're doing that more and more, like maybe even widening it up to a band, a full band then again.
Oh, that would be amazing.
Yeah, let's see. Maybe that could be, could be in the future another album.
Cool. How many days did you record it for, by the way? I was curious.
2 days. Yeah, only 2 days. Yeah.
Oh, cool. Let's talk about, like, what are your hobbies when you're not singing and playing the saxophone and recording albums?
Yeah. yeah, actually music takes up a big part of my life, but I would probably say going out into the nature.
Yeah.
Example, in summer, me and my boyfriend, we were in Scotland, and yeah, just like absolutely loved like hiking in the mountains, just like the fresh air and like all the waterfalls, and just like I really feel it frees my mind going out into the nature, and I need that, like especially being in this place, in this very intense place, this city. I need it now and then going back. And it's something we do a lot from where I'm from, in Palatinate. We have this big forest, and we go there with families on the weekend and hike to certain castles. We have different castles there in that region, and we hike there, and then we go and have a nice drink and go back. So yeah, that's... I do a bit of reading as well. I've just finished a really nice book called The Invention of Wings by Su Mong Kid. I'm not sure if I pronounced it right. That inspired me a lot. It's just like about two women at the beginning of the 19th century in the US and how they tackle challenges in life and pursue their goals in life. And also try and use these things then to inspire me again for writing music.
Yeah.
Yeah. And yeah, I would say in general, just socializing. I like to invite friends over to cook for them and be around people. Yeah. I'm a social person, I would say, really. Yeah.
What other books are you into? That sounds really interesting. The one you mentioned, especially... like you say, using it as a inspiration as well.
Yeah. I don't really remember the title of the other book. I read another book like about just like different women like in history, because I feel like you hear so much about like things that men have done like in throughout history, but like sometimes like really great achievements of women are almost forgotten, and in this book it just mentions what other women have achieved like in history as well, in any field.
My wife just bought my niece Maisie a book of like great women in history for her birthday. Such a great gift, though. I wish I'd thought of it. as soon as she said it, I was like, oh, that's a great idea. How about before you escape, tell us about, is there any albums that you're listening to at the moment or anything in the past that you really, that you really love, like any music?
Sure. I really, like, at the moment, just comes to my mind Light as a Feather by Chick Corea. I really like that album. I don't really know from what time it was exactly, but for example, there's Your Everything on it.
Yeah.
You know the song? Like, I really like that one. And I really like Norma Winston and John Taylor.
Yes. Have you heard the Azimuth Trio?
Yeah.
Oh man, I love that. There's a couple of their albums that I really love.
Yeah, they're really nice. Yeah, I really like that chamber music approach and playing. I mean, like the duo album by Norma and John. What is it called? It's called like Song Like Weather.
Oh, I haven't heard that.
I can really recommend that. I really like that album, yeah.
Oh, fabulous.
What else? Sonny Rollins' Saxophone Colossus is still...
Of course, yeah.
I really like, at the moment, not that many albums. I really like Bobby McFerrin.
Oh, me too. Oh, I'm really obsessed with him.
Yeah?
Yeah.
So cool. Do you like the circle songs he's doing? Do you know of that?
No, I don't. What is it?
It's like improvised music in the moment.
Right.
He has this group like with some other free improvisers, and he also gives like lots of workshops, and I think they even have a performance at the London Jazz Festival this year.
Yeah, I saw that because I thought about trying to somehow fool him into coming on the jazz podcast.
Oh.
and I went on his contact us part of the website, and I was like, oh no, I was exhausted just looking at it.
He's so busy.
Yeah, and so like different email addresses depending on what country you're in. He's obviously a very busy man.
Yeah. So yeah, in this music, he'll probably sing with the audience there as well. So, but yeah, you can have like a choir, and then he divides the choir in different parts and just like teaches them in the moment different melodies and motives, and puts that upon each other, and just creates these great, like, yeah, compositions in the moment.
Yeah.
It's really cool. That's what the circle songs are about.
Oh, that sounds awesome. I'm going to have to do some homework after this show. Investigate. Well, Miriam, thank you so much for coming on the Jazz Podcast. It's been a huge pleasure to sit and talk about your music and your album and about your London Jazz Festival gig on the 20th of November, which I shall conveniently mention one more time. So we're going to finish with Love Song.
Thank you. Thank you.
When you are not here, I hear lovely things you softly whisper into my ear. It's so wonderful to see the smile on your face when you look at me. I want to be a part of your life as long as I can be. I've realized it's precious that you are mine. I've had heavy times, but when I'm with you, it's a gift to be here without sadness or fear. Do you feel the same way too? I'd like to wander through life with you and see.
So, how did you feel about my Gary the Poster?
I was about to bring that up, Rob. What were you thinking?
I just wanted to give the podcast a feeling. If you haven't heard it yet, in Donnie McCaslin's show last week, there's a new, it's about 50 minutes in, I think, a new, like a jingle, basically. Mm. I just wanted to make it sound like the podcast had a very high budget and we had more time than we knew what to do with.
Yeah. did you play the piano on that, or was that?
No, I found it on the internet. Royalty-free jingles.
Wow.
Which is kind of tragic, given that the only skill that we have in life is to be musicians.
Obviously, you haven't recorded the interview that people have just listened to yet.
That's true.
Is Gary making another feature?
No.
No, okay. Did anyone actually write in to Gary?
Yeah, three people. Those were genuine questions.
Okay.
But then we don't release in advance who the guests are going to be.
Okay.
So it's kind of complicated.
General. Maybe we
exactly.
Should do
so you have to write a question not knowing who the guest is.
Well, it's like that episode where we recorded it separately, not knowing the answers to the questions.
Yeah. I think that was Mark Lockhart's show.
That was a fun episode to record.
I think this is like episode 78 or 9 now.
Really, not that many.
Yeah.
How are we still going?
I mean, it's we're only just, you know, when I used to joke about we'll do it until it's like 75. Well, to me it was never a joke. that's just the point.
Oh, another thing is it was December last year we recorded my episode. In that you said that we'd do you next year.
Did I?
Yeah.
Brilliant.
So when are we going to put that in?
Oh, I'm excited. Well then, I guess, you know,
I think it was like 20 something.
Yeah, Christmas show.
So why don't we announce that you're going to be on in December? People can write in to Gary to ask you questions.
That's incredible.
Or just email.
So if you just
Facebook, whatever.
We have a Twitter and an email address
that no one uses.
And you can just write a letter and just write Gary the Postman, Sunbury, care of Wonka. Absolutely no question.
Okay.
So
you'll never know if he doesn't nail it because he just won't receive it.
You know, someone stole my identity last year.
Oh yeah.
And the police were like, you know, do you know your postman? Could it be him? Is there a chance?
Is Gary becoming Rob Cope?
I was like,
it's the next episode of the Jazz Podcast. Can I speak with Gary?
We should interview Gary. I haven't told him that he's big time personality. But the police asked me what would, you know, could it be the postman, and I said, look, if Gary's stealing my mail, this isn't a world I want to live in. And then I was like, no, if, you know, no matter how far this goes, I'll defend Gary to the death.
Okay. Well, there you go.
This has been the Jazz Podcast. I don't know who it is next week yet, but I've got some suspicions.
Who are you thinking?
Thinking about Andy Robb.
Andy Robb.
Time to go broaden our horizons and go back to the northern lands of Scotland, it's probably minus 10 by now, and see what's going on up there.
Also, you've finished filming or editing your
film? Finished filming the Richard Turner A Life in Music.
Great news.
Good question, Dan. Thank you. And now, it's just a question of finishing a polished edit. I've got a rough draft done.
Great.
Rich's mum has watched it as well.
That's nice.
Pretty cool. That was a nice day. So it'll be premiering in April.
Great.
And then it'll be available on YouTube.
Great.
When we're done. Probably try and screen it at least once in each of the big, you know, cities around Britain.
Great idea.
Yeah. Thanks,
Dan. Cool. Looking forward to seeing it.
All right. See you next week.
Yeah, see you next week.
My God.